We're taking a look at where the U.S. economy stands. The latest jobs numbers show that millions of Americans quit their jobs in August, motivated by better paying opportunities and an abundant job market, and hiring hasn't taken off as fast as hoped for. At the same time, inflation continued to rise. It's now at the highest point in over a decade. We want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. How's the economy looking from where you're sitting? Have you joined the many other people who have left a job? What led you to leave? What are you looking for? If you're an employer, are you having a hard time employing people? And inflation, are you watching for it? Are you seeing higher prices? Is it affecting you, your pocketbook, your business? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can email ideas@WPR.org. Menzie Chin is a professor of public affairs and economics at UW-Madison. Menzie, welcome back to Central Time.
Hi, Rob. A pleasure being here.
Let's start with some new inflation numbers out today. I know you were eagerly awaiting them and what they told us. What did they tell us?
Well, I think first, let's give the headline number, which was 5.4% year on year in inflation. And if you see some headlines, you'll see something like this is the highest in 13 years. One thing to keep in mind is it's certainly not the highest on record. You know, you go back into the 80s, you'll see inflation rates in 10, 12%. The other thing to remember is that's a year-on-year measure. You know, you're looking at the change over 12 months. In point of fact, on a monthly basis, so annualize the change from August to September, inflation's actually coming, well, it's slightly up from last month, and then it's slightly down from the month before that. And so on a month-to-month basis, you're actually seeing inflation trending downwards. So we don't have a straightforward picture, and different indicators give you different measures. On the other hand, we have some indications that the inflation is more broad-based. Early on, we would have looked to prices of items that were in the sectors that were reopening. And so you would see, for instance, cars, used cars in particular, rebounding strongly. That effect has dissipated to some degree, and we're seeing new things pop up in terms of pushing up prices in general, like energy, for instance.
For somebody saying, okay, I'm getting paid X amount and I have to spend on these key things, energy bills, gas for the car, food, things like that, are we at a point where people are feeling a noticeable pinch from the levels of inflation?
Well, I think that very much depends upon where you're standing in terms of what sort of job you're in and what basket you consume. What's true is if you look at manufacturing, for instance, and I sort of draw a trend line from what happened before the pandemic to now, well, maybe you're not too far off the track. And in fact, manufacturing has come back a lot in terms of employment as well. So maybe that all makes sense. Where you've seen the biggest jump in recent months and where the real wage, that is an inflation-adjusted wage, is higher than it was before and higher than the trend, the pre-pandemic trend, is in, for instance, accommodation and food services. And so here, that's where you see a big jump in wages and wages after accounting for inflation. So those people, to the extent that they still have a job, or they newly moved into that sector, they're actually slightly better off than what you would have expected in terms of the trend. But once again, it really depends upon where you are in the economy, what sort of job you're doing, and what kind of bundle of goods and services you consume.
We're talking to UW-Madison economist Menzie Chin about some of the latest big economic news, focusing on inflation and jobs numbers. Pretty big pieces of the story there. You can join in with your thoughts or your questions at 800-642-1234. Let's go to your calls now. Mike is with us in Madison. Mike, hi.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. What do you want to tell us about, Mike?
Back in July of this year, my company, we had been working from home for about 18 months. And my company decided that everybody had to come back into the office. I work in a tech job, and that's kind of difficult for me. I was saving $300 a month on gas. I was saving 10 hours a week or on commuting. And so I left that job for another job that was going full remote. And since then, I start a new job next week. And between that first job and my new job I'm starting next week, I've realized an increase of 60% in my income. and I'm working fully from remote from home. So I know it's kind of a tech industry thing, but it's definitely the right move for me.
All right. Congrats on the new gig, Mike. And Menzi, this is a part of the job story. Apparently a lot of people doing what Mike's doing, quitting a job, and at least in some cases, going somewhere else that's maybe better paid. What are you looking for in the people leaving jobs to find new ones department?
Well, this is certainly part of the big story in terms of the labor market. I mean, typically we tend to look at the aggregate numbers, how many net new jobs are created in the economy. And in fact, in September, that number disappointed substantially. Mm-hmm. The headline number was less than half of what economists expected. But there's another big story, and that is the large number of quits or separations in the economy. And so that was like 6 million in August, and that's a record as far as I know. And that's signaling something. And on top of that, I guess this sectoral distribution signals something else. That is, a big number of the separations are in high contact services. And so that tends to suggest that a lot of people are, for whatever reason, not willing to take these high contact service jobs in, let's say, accommodation and food services or retail trade at the given wages right now, or they just decided this is not the job for them, and so they're leaving in record numbers. On top of that, I guess the high demand for labor, so I think job openings were something on the order of 10.5 million. That means that if you quit your job, the likelihood you can get another job is higher than it might otherwise have seemed. And so these things are pushing quits. On top of that, what's not quite knowable is, how much the pandemic has struck or affected this this development. So, for instance, some people might have to left their jobs because they've got childcare issues, which we thought would have been resolved perhaps with schools going back to in-person teaching fully, or they have difficulty getting childcare, or their care for the elderly that might be impacting, or just fear of working in circumstances where you've got lots of people you're coming into contact with who might not be vaccinated, so that you have a perceived higher likelihood of getting sick. So that is one of the big things, that people are sorting themselves out of the jobs that they were in. And we don't know if they've gotten new jobs. We don't track that specifically, whether they've actually moved into a new job in the meantime.
Thanks a lot for that call. We'll be talking more about the trend of people quitting their jobs over the last couple months tomorrow on Central Time. Now let's go back to your calls at 800-642-1234 with Samantha in Whitehall. Samantha, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I was just like, I work at a place called Styrene's in Arcadia, foam packing. And we have a couple of our employees that are out sick with this COVID. And there's some that, we're not getting the people, like we used to before the pandemic. And we're always, we always have it in the paper that they're looking for, everything that you could name in a factory. And we're just not getting the people. And it seems like the people that I work in are getting stressed out, overworked. And what do you do there? How do you draw the people in? Because we do work in close proximity with each other. And if you don't know if they're vaccinated, because we don't have to wear a mask if we're vaccinated, but fully. But if how do you know if you're, there's some of them that, you don't know for sure, and they could be, without a mask on. I know a couple that definitely aren't vaccinated, but don't wear the mask.
Samantha, thanks for the call. Samantha's bringing up a quandary, Menzi, that I think is facing a lot of workers in places where you're in close contact with others, as you were saying, and employers trying to bring people into that situation.
Well, once again, I guess this comes to the point that the labor force has shrunk to a certain extent, partly because of the pandemic. Just, certain people have decided that it's not worth the risk to be working at the given wages. So that's a problem both with the wages and the, I guess it's the personal choices on top of that. But on top of that, you've got a lot of shocks that have hit the system. So There are a lot of job openings. There are a lot of people who are still looking for jobs, but they may not be in the same industries. Mm-hmm. They may not be in the same location. And, you know, when you look at aggregate numbers, you miss that sort of thing. So I think what the experts who look at the labor markets are predicting, over time, some of these things should lessen in severity. That's certainly what we're hoping. And the reasons would be, well, first, you know, if you get the pandemic under control to a greater degree, so people don't have this fear of coming into work, well, that's one problem solved. If you can deal with problems of school-aged children having to be taken care of when people are working, well, that would be another partial solution. If you can get enough workers in the childcare industry hired and employed so that you can provide safe childcare, yet another constraint on people taking jobs will be removed. There's also what's often been discussed, which is benefits were too high. Unemployment benefits were too high during the period of these extended or enhanced unemployment insurance benefits, the sort of the pandemic response. And those have all disappeared by now. Some of them disappeared several months ago. And yet the thing that we haven't seen is a big response in the states that cut these benefits early on. Now, what may be true is there's perhaps a delayed response. So several months after these benefits are gone, the enhanced benefits at least, then maybe more people will enter into the labor force. I wish I could say I know how much to apportion to each of these categories of influences, but I don't think anybody knows for sure.
Thanks again for that call. Menzi Chin is with us, professor of public affairs and economics at UW-Madison. We're looking at the latest jobs and inflation numbers. Still time for your call at 800-642-1234. Are you seeing higher costs that are affecting you or maybe your business? What's your job scene? Have you left and found a new job lately? Call in at 800-642-1234. The conversation continues coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk with UW-Madison economist Menzi Chin, looking at the latest inflation and job numbers around the country. And you could join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts, your questions, your experiences as an employee or employer. Call 800-642-1234. Let's go back to your calls now. Jeff is with us in Superior. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, good afternoon, gentlemen. My question is about the money supply and our federal economy, our national economy. We just passed law, you know, in the Congress. Biden signed an increase in our national debt. All of us consumers, as long as we're spending, I think we have the largest debt ever in terms of our credit cards and stuff. But as long as we're spending and the value of our dollar stays high, isn't really everything okay?
Interesting. Jeff, Menzi, what do you think?
Well, I economists are want to say there's always a trade-off. And so the fact is, in a crisis, you do want to, especially in the crisis where either you've got to support people so they can live, or you want to support total demand for goods and services so you don't have lots of unemployment, you need to take emergency measures, and you need to, and for the federal government, that means spending above the tax revenue that you get. And so you're running deficits, and as long as that's happening approximately, then you're going to be building up your national debt. Has that been a problem? Well, we built up the national debt over the past substantially as a ratio of GDP over the past 10 years, maybe even 15 years. And that hasn't had a big impact on either interest rates nor necessarily on the economy in general. So you might say all good and well. I guess the problem is, as the debt to GDP level grows and grows and grows, at some point you got to stabilize that number. You don't want debt to increase forever as a ratio to GDP, because you're just becoming more indebted. So the question is, how do you stabilize that? And one of the things is perhaps you try to cut back on entitlements, or you try to spur long-term growth, or you do both. And so, for instance, the Biden administration is talking about investments, and you might say that's just jargon or for political consumption. But truly, if you want to boost, if you want to reduce the ratio of debt to GDP over the longer term, one of the best ways of trying to do it is to accelerate the growth rate and investment in infrastructure, investment in new technologies, and investment in the human capital of people, we hope will do that. The other approach, which is just to cut spending wholesale and raise taxes, that might work, but more likely in recent past, it hasn't worked very well because you tend to throw the economy either into a recession or slow growth. The one plus we have now relative to the past is real interest rates, that is inflation-adjusted interest rates, are at really low levels. For 10-year, it's probably something like a negative 1 percentage point. That is, the real interest rates are negative. And so to the extent that real interest rates are negative for the federal government, this increase in debt is not as worrisome as if, for instance, the real interest rate were 3 or 4% as it was in the 1980s.
Thanks for that call, Jeff, at 800-642-1234. Looking at the big economic news, inflation and jobs, with Menzie Chin from UW-Madison. Menzie, with rising costs in at least some sectors, people are still pointing toward a supply chain problems, whether it's a whole bunch of goods sitting in boats waiting in queues, either at ports across the ocean or outside of LA. President talked about that today. People saying, hey, we can't get glass bottles to bottle whatever our product is. Do you see that as something that's driving costs up in selected sectors of the economy?
Well, definitely supply chain disruptions are important. And I think part of the problem in forecasting, so the Fed in particular, but other forecasters had thought that this blip up in inflation would be a little less persistent, a little bit more transitory than it has turned out to be. Well, that's because we didn't anticipate these supply chain disruptions being so large and pervasive. And they're not just in America. I think that's one thing to remember. So we have problems getting things offloaded, the ships in the ports, and then put into trucks to drive off the port. So that's what the Biden administration has tried to do with respect to sort of increasing the throughput in the port system. Mm-hmm. But we also have these constraints elsewhere in the world economy. So, for instance, we have the chip shortages because the chip manufacturers in East Asia can't keep up with demand. And part of the problem elsewhere is that getting stuff out of East Asia, where a lot of things are produced, not just chips, but lots of sort of high, medium-level manufactured goods. Well, when, for instance, China shuts down a port because it's got a zero tolerance towards COVID cases, well, that's going to hinder the supply chain working in the way that it has typically worked. So we have a supply chain problem in the U.S. in terms of transportation of goods and in terms of getting all the inputs we need. But part of that is also happening in the rest of the world. And the reason is this interaction between the pandemic and also this rapid reopening of the economy in general, in the global economy, such that you get this sort of a perfect storm in a way of supply disruptions that we hadn't planned for.
And I wanted to ask you about that demand side of things. It isn't so much that people aren't producing enough stuff, and it isn't just that people aren't shipping enough stuff. It's that we're ready to buy stuff, right?
Well, we're ready to buy goods, that's for sure. And that's been true for a while. And now, depending upon where we are between the surges in COVID, we're ready to buy services. So yes, it's, demand seems to be there. Although you have to remember, we put in a lot of stimulus over the past year and a half. And a lot of that is going to be waning. I mean, it'll still be there, but the size of that stimulus is going to be shrinking so that you don't have this support to the economy that you did before. Now, back in April, when hopes were high, we thought we'd put in enough stimulus to let us sort of cruise on for a substantial amount of time with that demand in place. But given that we've got these constraints, some people not working, running down their savings, then that demand surge is is waning. So it's interaction. I mean, once again, between how much we've got the supply shifting inwards, that is a reduction, how much prices have been bumped up because of higher costs, and then this demand that's shrinking overall. So we have lots of things moving at the same time, which makes it very hard to trace out exactly what's the dominant influences in pushing around the American economy.
Briefly, as we wrap up, Menzi, I'm hearing some people worried about inflation. If I'm reading you right, you're not that worried, at least not yet. Is there a point where you would see it as a worrisome thing?
So, we have to ask ourselves, why do we worry about inflation? Inflation is worrisome because it makes the decisions we undertake, like how much to save, how much to spend, how much to work, more complicated, especially if that inflation is uncertain. If it's certain, if it's stable in a way, then you're a little bit less worried. On top of it, higher inflation can be good for the economy to the extent that, well, if the inflation rate's on average higher, then wages are easier to move around to make sure you get the right adjustment. Interest rates can, in real terms, go lower than they otherwise would be. So it's the kind of inflation that you get. If it's highly uncertain and that makes decision-making hard for everybody, then that's a problem. So that's the concern. Now, what's true is the surveys of people say that inflation is going to be high for the next year, like 5-6%. Whereas economists are much more sanguine, something much more closer to 3%. I'd say if you're going to 4%, 3%, 4%, and you've got accompanying elevation of uncertainty, that's a problem.
Menzi, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us.
My pleasure.
Menzi Chin is a professor of public affairs and economics at UW-Madison with us for a look at jobs and inflation numbers.